everybody. Once again, Cal Banyan and Roy Hunter, we're back for part four. I hope you've been following the series. Roy's been going through, giving us some tips, tricks, insider techniques on a number of different topics. We started off with an interview, and then we did telephone techniques and booking and appointments. And then we went on to working with, what did we work on last time?
Convincers.
Convincers. Ah, now I'm convinced. And so I think we're doing a good job. Before we get started, in case you're watching this one for the first time and didn't get the others, I got a phone call from Roy, found out he was in town, and I called him back and brought him over to our center. He got the tour of the center. I know he enjoyed that.
I'm very impressed.
Thank you. And I said, Roy, while you're here, I've got the equipment set up. We just did a podcast and a Meet the Pros seminar edition just yesterday. Why don't you come in and we'll do some stuff? And we brainstormed over lunch, and you know, normally we'd be in our ties and stuff like that, but it's a Saturday afternoon. I drug Roy in here, and
I didn't even bring a suit and tie.
That's right. He called me from Disneyland, and so it just attests to his love of the profession and interest to get the word out to everybody. So as we get started, let me just pull out my notes here, and guess what? We're going to talk about an introduction to parts therapy, and Roy has a background in just about everything in hypnosis, but what he is probably best known for, except for maybe your benefits approach, is the is your background in parts therapy, and because of the work you do with Charles Tebbets. And I'd like you to give really just kind of a brief background, a history of parts therapy to get us started, and then bring us up to date with what you're doing now.
Okay. Thank you. Charles Tebbets actually taught me parts therapy in 1983 and had already been teaching parts therapy for several years. He did not originate parts therapy. Oftentimes through the years, people have asked me if Charlie invented parts therapy. He did not. He borrowed the technique from the work of Paul Federn and gave Paul Federn credit not only in the classroom but also in the out-of-print book Miracles on Demand, which was published in the 1980s. What he did is he took Federn's concept of id and super-id and evolved it into a more client-centered approach where instead of going in looking for specific parts of the subconscious, he would call out the various parts that were involved in a client-centered conflict and ask the parts to name themselves and give themselves names or titles. Now, let me backtrack a little bit and mention what the concept of parts therapy is all about. It's based on the idea that we do wear different hats in life. Mm-hmm. I have an inner child who loves to play, like I was doing at Disneyland yesterday. I have another part, which is the professional, and certainly Cal knew which questions to ask to persuade me to come in here and live another day of my passion.
That's my inner salesman part coming in.
Indeed. And you have an inner instructor. You also have an inner social person, which I got to experience last night with a nice dinner in your home. Thank you very much.
Oh, sure. Pleasure having you and your wife over.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Well, we do wear different hats in life. And the concept evolves into other scenarios so that if a client sees me, for example, for smoking cessation and fails to respond to suggestion and imagery, and for one reason or another regression does not seem appropriate, I can use parts therapy, which is based on the concept of calling out that part of the client that wants to keep on smoking and also call out that part of the client's subconscious that is motivating him or her to invest their time and money into quitting. And then, in essence, I am like a mediator. I'm mediating conflict resolution to help a client resolve inner conflicts. But instead of mediating between two different people who have a disagreement, I am acting as a mediator between two conflicting parts of the subconscious, which Charlie called ego parts. Now, this concept is not new to the world of hypnotherapy and counseling, because there are variations. Watkins and Watkins evolved the concept of ego state therapy and published their work on it in the late 1970s. And ego state therapy is very similar to parts therapy, but Charlie always had a habit of giving credit where credit was due. So I have no reason to believe that Charlie copied Watkins and Watkins, because he gave Paul Verdun credit. So it is my belief that Tebbets and Watkins evolved parallel paths based on the work of Verdun. There are other variations of parts therapy that have come out since. Voice dialogue is a very well-known one, which is part of the NLP community. Voice dialogue does not employ a deep trance. That's the biggest difference between voice dialogue and parts therapy, because I have found from experience that when I have been a client on the receiving end of voice dialogue, being a somewhat analytical person myself, my results are only temporary through voice dialogue. If I'm going to have results, I need to be hypnotized deeply before parts therapy is facilitated. And I've taken this same approach with my clients and also in teaching hypnotherapy students as well as hypnotherapy professionals. You need to make sure the client is in a deep enough trance and also convinced that he or she is in hypnosis before the conflicting part and the motivating parts are ever called out. In essence, what I do is I call out the part that is in conflict with the conscious decision to change. I don't go calling out protector parts and other various parts unless necessary during the process. And I don't give a title to the part like a lot of people do who use the variations. I say, there is a part of you that is causing you to smoke. And then I build rapport with that part, and in the same style that Emerson uses with continuing the work of Watkins and Watkins, he treats the ego states with respect. I treat the parts with respect. And then after the part that wants to keep on smoking or keep the client stuck overeating or whatever the inner conflict is, says its piece, then I call out the motivating part, in other words, the part that wants to change. And then I give the motivating part an opportunity to speak. Now, what's the number one complaint children have against parents? They don't listen, right?
Okay.
Okay. These parts of the subconscious are like inner child parts in many instances, and it's very common for them to feel like the conscious person isn't listening to their input. So the harder they try to quit smoking or the harder they try to reduce, the more this part causes them to keep on overeating or keep on smoking. And how many New Year's resolutions literally go up in smoke?
Probably about 6 billion a year. I think that's the population of the world.
So basically, my job is to ask the right questions and help these two parts resolve their differences by forming alliances with each other. And by the way, my corporate identity is alliance self-empowerment. I help people to get their conscious and subconscious into alliance when they have inner conflicts. Then I help the parts to come into alliance by forming alliances with each other. And in essence, that's what mediation is all about, getting two people who have a differing opinion to somehow meet on middle ground. Now, the process is
to come to a win-win.
To come to a win-win, thank you. That's another way of putting it. It involves proper preparation and then a process which I call the 11-step process, because there are 11 important steps to facilitating client-centered parts therapy. And then the conclusion involves wrapping it up with post-hypnotic suggestions and imagery after the resolution is obtained, and then doing other appropriate concluding aspects such as debriefing after the session and or scheduling another follow-up session if appropriate. And it's tough to give you the entire overview of parts therapy with this limited amount of time, so rather than overviewing the entire process or going through all of the steps, I just wanted to hit the highlights and touch on the concept. The concept is we wear different hats. A lot of people have inner conflicts, and oftentimes where regression therapy has failed, parts therapy has succeeded. I don't use parts therapy with all the people all the time, only with some of the people some of the time, because I believe in fitting the technique to the client, not vice versa. But if a client has an inner conflict over an inability to change a desired habit.
Tell me what you think of this idea. In five path, you know, phase one is a preparation, testing, and convincing phase. Phase two, we regress to cause and do the informed child work and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then we're very emotionally based, so we also do some forgiveness work in phase three and four.
Yeah.
Then what we believe we're doing there is that we're going after the cause of the problem.
Right.
But sometimes there's something going on now that is either reinforcing the problem or demanding that the problem continue, and we call that secondary gain. And the secondary gain is on one hand they want to change, but on the other hand they don't, and that's the internal conflict. And five pathers, that's when we go into parts therapy. That's kind of our routine. And so like you, sometimes we will do parts therapy and sometimes we don't, and we mainly look at it until we have evidence that there is this internal conflict, which we call secondary gain. That's kind of our razor of when we would use parts therapy. Maybe you can add or expound on that.
Well, certainly there are times when regression therapy is sufficient for somebody and there's no need to facilitate parts therapy. Mm-hmm. So I don't facilitate parts therapy if it's not necessary to.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That being said, frequently if I'm uncertain which technique to use, rather than doing it in a set order, I will follow a concept that Charlie taught. And this would be like taking Highway 99 versus Interstate 5 from Los Angeles to Sacramento. Mm-hmm. It's a different way to get to the same place. If I'm not sure whether to use regression therapy or parts therapy, instead of choosing one first over the other, I will ask finger response questions of what Charlie taught as a seven psychodynamic, secondary gain being one of them, inner conflict being another. I have found frequently when there's a yes with inner conflict, there's also a yes with secondary gain. But occasionally I'll get a yes with one of them, but not the other.
Okay, so you see that you can have secondary gain but not have inner conflict.
Amazingly.
Getting kind of technical here.
Getting technical, but amazingly, that is sometimes a perception out of a client's subconscious. Mm. Now, my conscious opinion is I don't know how you can have one without the other.
Right.
But that
it's their
isn't
perception
necessarily
that
so with their perception. And right. I work on the basis of the client's perception. It's much like, you know, when you do regression, you work through the client's perception of the past.
Right.
And I do my disclosure about the false memories before I ever begin by letting a client know that we remember things as we perceive them, and emotions can oftentimes alter the perceptions. So even if what you remember is a combination of fact and fantasy, the goal is to help you release yourself from whatever emotions are involved with that perception, and then to forgive yourself. Mm-hmm. And if you think you're going to have a problem with that, I need to know that now before I ever begin the regression.
Mm-hmm.
I will use regression if I get a yes for past experience in the psychodynamic questions. And by the way, I go through those psychodynamic questions in my parts therapy book as part of the proper preparation.
Beautiful. I didn't mean to get you off track.
Right.
I was curious about your thoughts on that.
My thoughts are, at a conscious level, I don't know how you can have inner conflict without secondary gain,
and
or vice versa.
Right.
But I can tell you that the times I have used finger response questions over the years, oftentimes I've had a yes in one without having a yes in the other.
Mm-hmm.
And in essence, if I get a yes with secondary gain, I will frequently choose to use parts therapy. It depends on the client.
Yeah. And so that's exactly what I'm saying, is I see that parts therapy is the ideal approach for dealing with secondary gain. And that's why, folks, you guys out there that are watching this, I know some of you are physicians and some of you are psychologists and some of you are counselors and social workers and so on. And I know you pull your hair out trying to help people with secondary gain. And this parts therapy is almost like the magic bullet. When you become skilled, you can really help these people that are stuck in this kind of bind. Beautiful.
Thank you. And those of you, by the way, who are familiar with the work of Watkins and Watkins might want to get a hold of Gordon Emerson's book, Ego State Therapy. It was published by Crown House Publishing in 2003, and I strongly recommend that my students buy and read that book. It's a brilliant work, and one that I am also recommending at all of the parts therapy workshops that I facilitate. I really like where Emerson is coming from, and I believe that he practices ego state therapy in a very client-centered manner, And Emerson is to ego state therapy as what a lot of people consider me to be to parts therapy. Emerson did not invent ego state therapy. He gives Watkins and Watkins credit. I did not invent parts therapy, neither did Charles Tebbets. But Charles Tebbets developed it years ago before I ever entered hypnotherapy, and I've been doing hypnotherapy since 1983. So if anyone comes along trying to claim that he or she invented parts therapy, I would say that somewhere along the line they learned something based on the work of the late Charles Tebbets.
So now I'm wondering about you learned a certain style of parts therapy, Charles Tebbets, and then, you know, certainly you've been doing this for years and years, and you've refined some things and made some changes. And I mean, you can't go into a lot of detail because of our time limitations, but you can give us a gist of how you've updated it maybe for the times. And I know there's we live in a different world 20 years later.
Yes, we do. Mm-hmm. The biggest update is that Charles Tebbets was a debate champion. And he actually taught us to be like an arbitrator, to listen to each part and then tell each part what to do. My difference is I strongly believe we should be a mediator and ask the right questions and have the parts come up with their own resolution. So if two parts are unable to resolve their differences, I call in a third part. I ask if there's another part that can offer some suggestions or words of wisdom that will help part A and part B come to terms of agreement. So that is one big difference. Charlie usually won the debate. Most of us are not debate champions like the late Tebbets, and one of my former students followed Charlie's example, lost the great debate. A woman popped up out of trance when he started getting argumentative with a part.
Exactly.
And then he came to me and said, what do I do? And I said, were you treating each part as a person with respect? And he said, I was engaging in a great debate that Charlie taught, he wrote about in Miracles on Demand. And I said, you offended a part, you apologize to it, just like it were a person.
That's right.
Basically, in the short version, it took him two sessions to undo the damage. He gave her two free sessions, so he did the right thing. Charlie was still living, so I drove to Edmonds and had a lengthy conversation with Charles Tebbets about what happened. And he looked at me and he said, Hunter, you're right. He didn't live long enough after that, unfortunately, to put his new opinion in writing, but I respect the man greatly for being willing to admit that it was time for him to update his own work. That, to me, showed that he was a giant of a man and a master teacher. For him to be willing to admit to one of his former students that it was time to update his own work, to me, showed integrity with capital letters.
Beautiful. So as I'm following you along here, is there any particular, let me say something else first. And, you know, that individual's experience that he benefited from and you benefited from, and now you're sharing it, you're sharing it in your classes, you're sharing it here. And so it just is like a wave going out, you know, and people benefiting. I'm glad you let me be a part of that.
Thank you.
Is there a time, before I go there, are there particular cases or situations where you find yourself doing more parts therapy than others, you know, certain issues that you work with?
I would say I do parts therapy more frequently with weight control than with smoking cessation. Because oftentimes a person who wants to quit smoking just needs enough push to believe that hypnosis will work, to imagine the success, to get emotionally involved in the benefits. And for those of you who have seen this new DVD movie called The Secret, you understand that when a person gets emotionally involved in fantasizing the benefits of achieving a goal, that's basically a variation on the benefits approach that I have covered in The Art of Hypnotherapy. When there are strong negative emotions that are contradictory to the goal that the person wants to achieve, that's when parts therapy can be very valuable, either parts therapy or regression therapy, to get at that core cause. And sometimes I make that determination easily at a conscious level by talking with the client in the intake session and based on what's happened in one or two previous sessions, because I like the first one or two sessions to be pleasant and enjoyable. And if I plan on using regression or parts therapy, I wait until a third or fourth session unless I'm working with a hypnotherapist who understands the concept of regression or parts therapy. as far as whether to use parts or regression. More frequently, if a person has trouble with smoking, I'll end up using regression instead of parts. With weight control, depending on the circumstances, I'll usually end up using parts more often than regression, mm-hmm. but not by much. Mm-hmm. And I would say, depending on which year out of the years I've been in practice, you might have had a slightly different answer mm-hmm. to that question. Mm-hmm. I have not kept accurate statistics, mm-hmm. so I can't give you a black and white answer.
I just want to get a gist of what you're saying.
But I would say, as a general rule, if the client's goal is to overcome an undesired habit, that's much more likely going to result in parts therapy just as easily as regression therapy. But if the client is seeing me for fear of flying or nail biting or something, you know, confidence or something that will generally involve an event out of the past, regression will almost always be the technique of choice instead of parts therapy. Okay. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm following you. And as I'm listening to you, it also... I'm concerned that I might have got you off track earlier. I was having you go through the highlights of the parts therapy, and then I started asking questions, and I didn't want to get you too off track. Do you remember where you were with that?
Highlights, first of all, you want to explain the concept to the client before parts therapy ever begins mm-hmm. so that your client does not leave your office thinking he or she is an undiagnosed NPD. Second, you want to hypnotize to as deep of a level as possible, preferably somnambulism, but at least somewhere between medium and deep, before you begin the process. Otherwise, if you have an analytical client like myself, the results will only be temporary. Mm-hmm. And I can say that from having been a client of Voice Dialogue twice and also having had a couple of parts therapy sessions through the years where the therapist didn't take me deep enough. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And consequently, the results were only temporary. So the client must be deep. Thirdly, you must understand the importance of being objective and not attached to the outcome, so that you act like a mediator working objectively with all the various parts. You avoid giving any post-hypnotic suggestions to the parts until they come to terms of agreement. Then you give the suggestions to each part to honor its agreement, and then after the parts are integrated, then you give both direct and indirect suggestions and imagery as appropriate to wrap up the session. The 11-step process is in-depth. My book actually covers possible detours that are very common along the path of parts therapy.
Well, let me interject this. So the book you're talking about about this segment is this book here, and that is Hypnosis for Inner Conflict Resolution. And this is an introductory talk here. This is the next step. Or to take Royce Hunter's class. He offers it in a 2-day and a 3-day form. Are you going to be doing it at the NGH convention this year?
I will be doing it at the NGH convention this coming August. I will be doing one for those of you who can't go to the NGH convention or have enrolled in a different workshop at NGH. I'll be doing one here at Cal Banyan School probably in late September. The date will be set later, so be sure to check back at Cal's website for the exact dates.
Beautiful. And so we're talking about books, I might as well get these other two books in. I've got it in part three, but these are the two books that made Roy famous, and they are The Art of Hypnosis, The Art of Hypnotherapy. Of course, The Art of Hypnosis is about hypnotizing and deepening and these kinds of techniques. Once you've got, you've learned that, then you can go on to what are you going to do once you've got them in hypnosis? And this is a great book as far as all the different kinds of techniques, the major techniques in our profession. Great place to start. When I first got started, these were my main textbooks. If I could find my original books, you'd see that they're underlined and highlighted. And so, I owe a lot to Roy for putting this information in a very convenient place. And I recommend it to all of our students and everyone who just wants a really concise way to look at these kinds of techniques and materials. And there's many schools that use them as their primary textbooks. And
this is true.
The great contribution that Roy has made and continues to make. And I've recommended that he write another book, but I won't talk about that right now because I know it's going to cause him more grief than all three books put together. Before we wrap up this parts therapy, is there a contraindication for doing parts therapy? Is there any group that you say, boy, I just shouldn't do this kind of work with?
Well, if I have reason to believe that my client is an undiagnosed or diagnosed multiple personality disorder person, or DID, I would prefer that that person see a professional who has experience and training with people who suffer from that disorder. Mm-hmm. I will not knowingly work with a person who has multiple personalities unless I am working in supervision and collaboration with a credible psychotherapist, psychologist, or mental health counselor who is skilled in helping clients with that specific area.
Beautiful.
And that comes from the combination of having spoken with a couple of recovered and fully integrated MPDs, and also a psychotherapist who took my course about 10 years ago because he wanted to learn parts therapy. He specialized with people who have multiple personalities, and he felt that through parts therapy and regression therapy combined with hypnosis that he could help his clients who suffered from that to integrate rather than simply learning how to cope with it. And I honor and respect him for taking my course with that motive in mind.
Beautiful.
That being said, my goal in helping people resolve inner conflicts, and as far as any hypnotic technique for that matter, is to help them become more empowered to attain their ideal empowerment. Back in the late 90s, I had a person with very credible degrees from the healthcare community take my course, and she wanted to experience parts therapy. She resolved something that she had been unable to resolve on her own, and at the conclusion of the session, she said, "Well, that was so simple, I don't know why I didn't think of it." I looked at her and I said,
You did.
She smiled and said, "Well, this really makes this profound."
That's right. And yeah, anyone that's in this helping profession knows that when the client takes ownership of the solution, then it's going to be more valued, and it's going to work better, and it's going to fit better into their life if it is something that they contributed highly to.
I would say that in conclusion on the parts therapy, my job is not to tell the parts what to do. My job is to ask the right questions and empower the parts that are in conflict to come up with their own resolution. And when the parts are unable to come up with their own resolution, I have thus far, knock on wood, in all my years of practice, I have been able to find another part within the inner mind that can help the parts in conflict obtain terms of agreement and come to the resolution.
And that's perfectly in line with conflict resolution mediation theory anyway.
Yes.
You really want to uncover with the in the speaking vocabulary of that profession, the interests of both sides. And then you show the commonality of interests and how they both would benefit by coming up with a new solution. And then that solution becomes what you build your direct suggestion from to wrap up the session. Is that right?
Yes. I do have DVDs that are going to be available on your website, a three-DVD set of parts therapy sessions I facilitated in Ireland in 1999. And there's a DVD by the late Charles Tibbetts, one of the best sessions he ever facilitated,
Wonderful.
Captured on videotape, where he worked with an epileptic, who, by the way, lectured at my hypnotherapy class several years later and told the students in the class he had had neither a drink nor a seizure since his sessions with Tibbetts.
Beautiful. He got his life back, didn't he?
Yes.
Beautiful. All right, thank you, Roy, for coming. I really appreciate you taking time out of your vacation, which has become a working vacation, to do this. I tell you what, you guys that are getting in on this, you're really getting something of value. Roy has traveled all over the world doing these kinds of talks. He's very well known. If you want to contact Roy, just go to the Banyan Hypnosis Mall. There's a Contact Us button. We'll be happy to pass that along to him. And that helps him keep track of knowing how effective this was at getting the word out to everybody. Also, if you happen to be on my blog right now, calbanyan.com, there's a place off to the side. It should be just right off to the right of your screen where you can sign up. to get these automatically so that you get these updates as we release them and so that you know about Roy's new products and Roy's new classes, as well as my new products, my new classes, and the other people that we bring to you. Okay, with that, I thank you once again. I thank you for coming. It's been great. I know that this has been chock full of information along with the other three parts. I know Roy also wanted me to ask you folks before I wrapped up, if there is a particular topic to contact us and let us know that you'd like to have Roy talk about while he's teaching here, probably in late September, and he can look at the feasibility of covering that information too. Roy has taught in just about every topic in the field of hypnosis, and so that, you know, we want to give you the information that you want. So once again, this is Cal Banyan, Banyan Hypnosis Mall, and CalBanyan.com. You guys have a great, best year ever. Bye-bye. This recording is the property of Cal Banyan and Cal Banyan's Banyan Publishing Incorporated. All rights reserved for private use only, may not be duplicated without written permission.